From Springfield, this is State Week, a program of analysis and commentary on the events that made news this past week in Illinois state government and politics.
While Donald Trump has made tariffs a key part of his economic agenda, here in Illinois, Governor J.B. Pritzker's reaching out to other countries. That does not mean, though, that the state won't be affected by a trade war. And it was a big deadline week at the State House. We'll talk about what happened and more coming up on State Week. I'm Sean Crawford in Springfield. Our panel includes Charlie Wheeler, Professor Emeritus and former Director of the Public Affairs Reporting Program at the University of Illinois Springfield. Charlie's also been a longtime reporter and observer. And our guest this week is Peter Hancock with Capital News Illinois. Peter, it's always good to have you back with us.
Thanks, Sean.
So, Peter, Governor Pritzker, just this week, he signed a what was being called a Memorandum of Understanding on trade with the UK. He just made a trip to Mexico. So what's he trying to accomplish here?
Well, on the one hand, this is one of the things that governors like to do. They don't really have a foreign policy authority of any kind, but they can be sort of a, I don't know what you'd call a hand holder in chief. They can help build relationships between the state and regional governments or state and national governments, between businesses to try and help build relationships more or less in an informal manner. This actually grew out of a trade mission that the governor led to the United Kingdom a couple of years ago. The Memorandum of Understanding, it's kind of a non-binding agreement where they agree to cooperate and work with each other, bilateral trade agreements, so to speak. This was one with Great Britain, which turns out to be, you know, one of the very large trading partners for Illinois. In the larger sense, you're seeing Governor Pritzker kind of taking on national and maybe a little bit of an international presence. Many people think, you know, he's gearing up for another campaign, possibly a run for the presidency, and building foreign policy relationships, with governments overseas. So he's been to Mexico. He just signed this agreement with the United Kingdom. The UK agreement focuses really heavily on technology, energy, manufacturing, some of the higher tech industries in Illinois and in the UK. UK is a big developer now of the new kind of nuclear energy, the smaller scale modular nuclear generating plants, which they think would be a good fit in Illinois. And this is all happening, of course, with the backdrop of the tariff wars that President Trump has been leading, the status of which seems to change by the hour. So it's kind of hard to say exactly what the status is today. But the message that the governor was sending out, it was that Illinois is a stable partner on the international scene. He used the word stable very pointedly there.
Now, Charlie, Illinois has a lot to lose if a trade war actually continues on. I would say one's already going on, but if it were to continue, and not just some of the industries that Peter had talked about, manufacturing, technology, agriculture, things of that nature, because of a lot of the exports, but also because a lot of businesses in the state also import and would have to possibly pay more from, say, China and other places. So this is really a key concern, I would think, for the governor and for the business community in the state of Illinois.
And one of the things that I found interesting, and confess being ignorant that I didn't know this before, that the British firms here in Illinois employ something like 90,000, 96,000 people. And so they're a fairly significant employer in the state of Illinois. As Peter said, I think the object of these missions is to, I guess, reassure other governments that Illinois is going to be stable. We're not going to go for the kind of goofiness that's happening at the federal level, and we'll be a reliable partner going forward. And if I'm not mistaken, Pritzker has also gone, I believe, to Japan and to Canada in the past with the same kind of mission. And of course, he signed a memorandum of understanding with Mexico a little while ago. But Illinois has been very active for many years. I mean, Governor Thompson, way back when, started, I think, something like a half a dozen Illinois trade offices in other countries to help Illinois producers get their goods into those nations and to encourage companies and businesses in other countries to look at Illinois as a good place to do business. So this is something that's been going on in terms of Illinois wanting to have good trade relations with other countries. It's been going on for, Lord, 50 years.
Well, we saw that expansion of that push on foreign trade by governors. We also saw a period, I would say up until Pritzker has taken over, in which you saw these the governors and many of the others in the legislature saying that maybe we're spending too much on foreign trade offices. Maybe we don't have the money to go do these trade missions. Pritzker hasn't viewed it that way, but there seemed to be a pushback there to that, and now maybe it's going a different direction?
Yeah, and it occurs to me that Bruce Rauner spent a lot of time bad-mouthing the state of Illinois. And I always thought that was pretty stupid, because what you want to do is present Illinois as a good place to do business. Rauner's message seemed to be, well, we're not a good place to do business because we have the unions, we have AFSCME, we have Democratic control. And I'm thinking, if I'm a manufacturer in Germany, and I'm thinking of locating somewhere in the U.S., and here this governor is telling me what a rotten state he has, why am I even going to consider it? So I think Pritzker has been good in that sense. He's highlighted the advantages that Illinois has, the educated workforce we have, our central location, the fact that we have ample supplies of water and energy. He's being a salesman, and I think in my mind that's part of what a governor is supposed to do. You're trying try and sell your state.
Peter, and we'll move on to some other topics, but I think the one thing that I've been focused on for the last several weeks has been as this discussion of tariffs or foreign policy really plays out with the Trump administration, has been what the impact is here in Illinois, and not just on businesses, but also on the state government, because we're trying to put a budget together, and a little over a month from now, they need to pass a budget. I would think this just muddies the water. We don't know what the tariffs will be on China going forward. We don't know if Trump will try to put these 90-day paused tariffs back in. So has Pritzker addressed that at all?
Not directly, but, it's lingering in the background of everything. You know, the state budget, you have to project out and anticipate how much revenue you're going to take in over the next year. Revenue depends heavily on what's happening in the economy. When the economy is good, people are employed, consumers are spending money, businesses are doing transactions, then revenue flows into the state. When the economy goes south, state revenues go south. And so all of this talk about tariffs and international trade, it will have a huge impact on the national economy, the global economy, and therefore the state economy. And, we not only don't know from one day to the next, we often don't know from 1 hour to the next what the tariff regime is going to be, what the policy is. Is it going to be 140% on Chinese goods coming in? Are we going to go back to the old 10 or 20%? What's the policy going to be? Businesses are having a hard time making plans and making decisions about future investments because you just don't know what the rules of the game are going to be. It filters down into everything, including discussions about the state budget and how much revenue the state will have to work with going into the next fiscal year.
Not only in terms of the business climate, but the fact that federal funding for programs in Illinois is a pretty significant part of our budget. You look at the Medicaid, which provides health care for low-income individuals, pays the bills for most senior citizens who are in nursing homes, and the Trump administration is talking about cutting it back severely. And so the question then is, as you're putting together the state budget, what can you rely on in terms of funding from the federal government?
Yeah, and you're still waiting on money that was already promised, so you're not sure if you're going to get that either. But, Peter, that's a good segue to move into talking about Medicaid. You reported on how nursing homes in Illinois are wanting to see higher Medicaid reimbursement rates. What's going on there, and what's the likelihood that's going to happen?
Well, in a lot of ways, this is kind of an old story. Medicaid is a major player in the entire healthcare industry. It's a jointly funded by the state and the federal government, and it covers people who generally can't afford to buy insurance anywhere else. That's pregnant women, infants and children, the elderly, and the disabled. Those are the big population groups. So the nursing home care is a big component of Medicaid. Medicaid pays for close to two-thirds of all of the nursing home care that's provided in Illinois. The nursing homes are saying that their rates are based on costs that are completely outdated. They were based on cost reports from before the pandemic, from back in 2017. There's been significant inflation since then. And so that portion of their rate, there's a rate structure there that includes all these different components. But, you know, the overall cost of just operating the brick and mortar facility of a nursing home, the administrative costs, buying the food, buying the janitorial services, buying the utilities, and they just aren't able, they can't stay in business. And we have, in fact, seen a significant number just in the last couple of years, more than 30 nursing homes have gone out of business. One large commercial operator filed bankruptcy last year. And so they're saying we need a rate adjustment. Now, at the same time, the nurses who work in the nursing homes are also saying they need pay increases, that the salary they're paid is very low, that they are understaffed. And they point out that just a couple of years ago, the state did a major reform of that other component of their rate structure, the cost of nursing. And they, you know, put like $700 million a year in new money into nursing homes that through a structure that was supposed to incentivize increasing the salaries and increasing the staffing of your nursing staff. And they're saying that that's not getting done. And so there are all these different competing interests that just say we're being underfunded. And I think pretty much any healthcare provider who is involved, you know, who accepts Medicaid would tell you we're all underfunded. Medicaid pays very low reimbursement rates compared to private insurance, which is, you know, they would argue in part why the cost of healthcare just gets shifted to other consumers because the Medicaid reimbursement rate is so low. So anyway, they're making a big push to put into statute rather than just the regular rate making procedure, put into statute to increase their reimbursement rates based on, you know, the cost model for those brick and mortar and administrative things.
Along with people saying, well, we may not be able to stay in business, there's also another aspect of this that comes up. We see it with healthcare providers quite often, such as maybe your primary care physician or somebody, that they won't accept Medicaid anymore. So if you're on Medicaid, they won't take you. And that could happen. I think it is happening at a lot of these nursing homes, may happen at more of them.
Yeah. And I think, again, it goes back to the fact that the reimbursement rate is so low relative to what private insurance will pay or relative to what an uninsured individual will be expected to pay out of pocket, that they're saying we just can't cover our costs with what is being provided. So, yeah, there are a lot of healthcare providers that will not accept Medicaid, and others where they have you just pay up front. It's a real problem, but healthcare in this nation has been a problem for a long time in that in terms of our healthcare system, we don't rate very highly in what we can provide to our citizens at what cost to them compared to most other, what you'd call first world nations. And that's been an ongoing battle for a long time. The notion that healthcare is a human right and we should guarantee it rather than depending on market forces. One of the things that I found interesting and Peter, you wrote about this, is that the folks who are in the legislature who are pushing the notion that, yeah, we should actually give these facilities what they are entitled to based on the inflation that has occurred over the last half a dozen years, the notion that, well, this isn't going to be a real financial problem for the state because the increase in the rates would be paid for through a nursing home bed tax, which is levied on each Medicaid-funded resident day in Illinois nursing homes. And then it is used to draw down federal matching funds. And I'm thinking, well, in this current climate, I'm not sure that you can say, oh, yeah, we don't have to worry about it because we'll be able to be reimbursed by the federal government. For example, just last week, the U.S. Senate endorsed the House passed budget resolution that calls for cutting hundreds of billions of dollars in costs. And it doesn't flat out say it, but to be able to reach that sum, they have to cut Medicaid over the next 10 years. So I'm thinking if you're a budget maker in Illinois and you're relying on being able to expand and rightly so, the reimbursement rate that we provide to the nursing homes and then say, well, we'll be able to get it from the federal government. I'm not sure that's a bet that I would want to make.
I mentioned that this has been a key deadline week in the Illinois legislature, so a lot of bills need to move to continue advancing here this session. One of those the governor has come out in support of. He made this announcement during his budget and State of the State address earlier this year, but that is to do something that a lot of schools have looked at, and that is getting students to put their phones away during class. Peter, this is something that they want to now pass some legislation that basically requires that there would be some method that these students would, you know, turn their phones in, have their phones not with them, not on, at least during class. This seems to be gaining some steam in the legislature.
Yeah, this actually turns out to be a very popular idea, and it's one that a lot of school districts have already started adopting anyway. But the legislation basically would require school districts to adopt some sort of policy that prohibits the use of cell phones during class time, during instructional time. Now, you know, what happens like in the hallways before and after school, those other times, you know, there's some flexibility in there. But what the governor wants and what many lawmakers want is that when you're sitting there in the classroom and the teacher is teaching, cell phones are off. And in the places where they have put this into effect, it turns out to have a very positive impact on the learning environment overall. Students spend more time actually focused on their studies, focused on what's happening in the classroom, not looking at social media, not looking at their text messages, not engaging in idle chit-chat with people in another classroom or somewhere. That it just brings about a much more positive sort of learning environment school-wide. And so this does actually appear to be moving. It's one of those things. And also, it doesn't cost anything. So it's one of those sort of feel-good policies. It doesn't cost anybody any money. And there's a good deal of evidence that it does improve the learning environment. There are, of course, you know, concerns, and there are supposed to be protections in there for students who need to have their cell phones for medical reasons. Also, they need to have access to cell phones, you know, in cases for emergencies. But overall, they want students to put your cell phone away and focus on your class, focus on the teacher, focus on what you're supposed to be doing, and stop looking at your phone. Stop, you know, looking at Facebook and Twitter and whatever other social media apps are out there that kids are using these days.
Yeah, and I know that there had also been concerns of kids filming things, maybe fights that were going on in some schools, things of that nature. But Charlie, this is the type of thing I look back, I guess I'll speak for myself. When I was in school, I could get distracted pretty easily, and I can only imagine that a kid with a phone that could turn their phone on and sit and scroll through social media or whatever during class would not be able to be that great of a student, I would guess, because they can't pay that close of attention to what's going on. So, yeah, like Peter said, because this really would not require any spending per se, at the state level, it seems like this is the type of thing that could get enough support, certainly, to pass, and the governor has already indicated support for it.
Yeah, and I think the vote in the Senate the other day, it was 55-0 in favor of this legislation. And usually, bills that get passed with no opposition, with no negative votes, are pretty well agreed upon. And generally, they're not all that significant to get that kind of broad-based support. This is a significant bill, but it doesn't cost the state anything. It probably won't cost school districts much. They may have to provide some kind of a safe environment or lockers or something like that for students' cell phones to be stored in. But it's a solid piece of legislation. And I'm guessing it'll pass the House with no difficulty. And obviously, Pritzker is going to sign it because he asked for it in his budget address.
Well, also, there was some legislation. Charlie, I'll ask you about this because I guess this impacts you more than me at this point, or Peter, but maybe not long from now. This one has to do with seniors who drive, and it has to do with having to take a driver's test. So the Secretary of State has come out in reverse, really, of what has been talked about for years, and that is senior drivers need to be tested, make sure they're still functioning well enough and fit to drive, if you want to call it that, each year. He's saying that's a little overkill. We don't need that. What are your thoughts on this piece of legislation?
Well, as someone who's not very far away from that age limit, I'm in favor of it. Every time I have to renew my driver's license, I get a little worried about the vision test that I have to take. But yeah, I mean, Illinois is, I think, a bit of an outlier in, being hyper cautious about allowing people over a certain age to drive. And I think, a lot of seniors, people are living longer, as they say, 70 is the new 60. And I think maybe it's time to ease up on some of those rules and just, let people over that age, continue just like everybody else. Everybody else is allowed to keep a driver's license.
Yeah. Charlie, your thoughts on it?
Well, actually, this is one piece of legislation that would directly affect me. Last time I renewed my license, I had to take the driving test. And the argument is that it's not fair because, and I think Secretary of State Alexei Janulius pointed this out when he called for this earlier this year, that the senior citizens are among the safest drivers of everybody. But in my mind, I think you need to test somebody's driving ability because, to be honest, when you get to be my age, your reflexes aren't as sharp as they used to be. Your vision is not as sharp. For example, in my case, I don't go highway driving. I wouldn't drive from here to Bloomington, for example. And I don't like driving at night because of the high-intensity headlights on some oncoming vehicles like large pickup trucks. And so you have to, in your own mind, you have to think to yourself, how do I safeguard myself and others in driving when you recognize that your reflexes aren't as sharp as they used to be, your vision is not as good? And the argument that's made, and AARP and others make this, well, it's unfair to seniors that they should have to take the test because your driving should be based on your ability and not age. And that's true, but how does the state measure one's ability if you don't have a test? So that's kind of where we are. And yeah, I maybe because of my age, I may not be as able to respond as quickly. But on the other hand, I find that when I'm driving along at the speed limit on some of the roads around Springfield, people will be passing me and they've got to be doing, the speed limit is like 35. They have to be doing 50.
And I should point out, this legislation also includes, I guess you would call it a safeguard, allowing family members to report, and that could prompt the driver's test to be taken by a senior, because the family member may feel as though the person is not capable, or maybe have questions if the person is capable of driving. Anyway, let's move on to our notes from the field, and Peter, we'll start with you this week.
Yeah, one major piece of legislation that got a lot of talk before the session that hasn't yet moved would be to completely overhaul the way we fund higher education in Illinois. They want to put universities on a funding system similar to the evidence-based funding system they now use for K-12 education. I am told that this legislation actually is going to move. It just wasn't able to move in time for this deadline week that we're in right now. There are other procedural ways to get around those deadlines. They can extend the deadline on this bill or put the language of the bill into some other vehicle. But it looks like there will be a serious attempt at some point this session to completely overhaul the way higher ed is funding. That would be good news for some of the smaller regional universities that are now very underfunded. Of course, all higher ed in Illinois can make the argument that they're underfunded, but this would put it on a more predictable system.
Okay. And Charlie?
To no one's surprise, certainly not mine, the Illinois Supreme Court earlier this week refused to take up a lawsuit that Illinois House Republicans had filed challenging the legislative maps that were drawn in 2021. And the court's ruling said the Republicans waited too long. One of the quotes from the opinion was, "Plaintiffs could have brought this argument years ago. Their claim that waiting multiple election cycles is necessary to reveal the effects of redistricting is unpersuasive." And the Republicans had argued that the districts are not compact and that they're gerrymandered to favor Democrats. The fact of the matter is, compactness is in the eye of the beholder. The Republicans say, well, we couldn't really file a suit because we had to see how the election played out. And it occurs to me that every other challenge, as the Supreme Court pointed out, every other challenge to redistricting has been brought within a matter of at most months, sometimes days, after the plan was actually approved and in effect. And the idea that you wait this long, as the Supreme Court said, we're actually closer to the next census count and the next redistricting than we are to the one that you're challenging. There was one dissenter, David Overstreet, who was elected as a Republican, and who argued that, well, this was a unique set of circumstances, and we really should have taken up this case and not sidestepped it.
All right, that's all the time we have for this episode of State Week. Our panel included Charlie Wheeler and Peter Hancock with Capital News Illinois. Look for State Week where you get your podcasts through the NPR app and at nprillinois.org. I'm Sean Crawford. Join us next time.
You've been listening to State Week, a program of commentary and analysis of events in Illinois state politics and government. State Week is produced in the state capital by public radio station NPR Illinois. This is IPR, Illinois Public Radio.